Om Shanti. Today, in this song, we heard the praise of the soul. The soul who is the master of the sense organs. And when I become conscious of being in the center of the forehead, constantly radiating the light and the might. And not only that, but as soon as I master my senses, I am able to master so many things around. Yesterday's lesson, we saw very clearly how God taught Arjuna to meditate. And in our today's morning session, we heard about the method and basis of Raj Yoga meditation, which is very simple. Just as we remember human beings, our near and dear ones, but remembering the human beings also, there is some basis. It is not that we remember anyone at any time. And the basis is, first of all, introduction, then clarifying my relationship with him. Do I have a relationship? Am I related to him? And what is my relationship? The third basis is love. When the relationship comes in practical sense, then the love also emerges. If we are not related, there is no love. And the fourth basis is attainment. It is so natural that wherever a person feels is going to attain something, the mind and intellect towards that place. So these are the four bases for human remembrance also. So when we have got the introduction of the self, what is the real identity of the self? What is the real identity of the Supreme? So the introduction part is very clear. Now, is there any relationship between him and me? Many a times we say yes. He's our father. He's our mother. He's our Supreme Satguru, the Supreme Teacher. But yes, when we sing bhajans, definitely we praise about these relationships. But we never experience that relationship with God. And on the other hand, we would say that, oh, I am so weak, I am so dirty, I am impure, and you are the highest on high, O God. So this shows that there are two levels. He is highest on the high and I am somewhere very low. So there is no connection that is established. And yoga means connection. So for that connection, there should be a very near and dear relationship established with him. And the more I come closer, then it is so easy for me to build up that connection. Human beings, when they remember someone and a telephone call comes from the other side, we feel so happy. We just remembered him and he has called me. And this is what we call as a telepathic connection, which is the connection with the power of thoughts. You remember someone, and when the mental frequency of both the people is tuned up, we experience this telepathic connection. So meditation also means it's a telepathic connection with the Supreme. When I uplift my consciousness level from the gross physical consciousness to a higher plane and consider myself as a soul, a divine entity, and the moment I'm stabilized in that divine consciousness, I'm able to establish that connection. And as I generate my thoughts towards God, it is seen and experienced at times, he also remembers me. When we get the response of human remembrance, we feel so happy. Just imagine when you are talking to God, and after a few moments or after a few hours only, you feel that whatever you have talked to him has practically happened. And you feel so happy that yes, God is listening to me. He's listening to my every thought. And there is immense happiness. But this is not the experience we get always. Raj Yoga meditation enables us to constantly be in this awareness and get this experience. The main thing is to have awareness constantly. It reminds me of a beautiful story that once there was a great saint and he had a beautiful place where he could do tapasya, and he had one disciple who used to stay with him. One day this great saint had a thought, I would like to go on my further penances. So he wanted to travel to the Himalayas. So he called his disciple and he said, day after tomorrow, I would like to leave this place and go on a further search so that I can go into the depths and I am able to contemplate. So the disciple said, it's fine, I can come with you. So the Guruji said, no, I think you can stay here, look after this ashram, because there will be some others who will also be coming constantly here. So you can share what I have taught you to them. I would like to go on myself. So the disciple was so obedient He said, fine, I would stay here. The next day was the Guruji's moan. He was in silence. So the next day this disciple has a thought and he feels, when Guruji is not here, let me just ask him, which are the things I have to pay attention upon, so that in his absence, I don't make any mistakes. So he goes up to the Guruji, who was in Maun doing meditation. He goes and sits in front of him. And after a few minutes, the Guruji opens his eyes. And he asks the Guruji, Guruji, I have one small problem. When you are not here, can you just guide me? Which are the things I have to pay attention to? So, being in silence, the Guruji asked for a notebook and a pencil. And on the notebook, on the page, he wrote, awareness. So, the disciple felt, well, this is very easy. I just have to keep awareness. That's all. So he felt so happy. As he went out and was looking at that word, trying to understand that word which the Guruji had written, he thought there should be something before and after maybe. So he goes up to the Guruji again and says, can you just elaborate this word? Means write something before and after. So the Guruji again asked for the same book. And on the page where he had written awareness, before also he added one word, and after also he added one word. And the word was awareness, awareness, awareness. So the disciple was so happy. Well, now this is very easy. I have to constantly keep awareness, that's all. So that I don't make a mistake. So he takes the book and goes out. As he goes out, still he has a question. Awareness, awareness, awareness means what? So he goes up to the Guruji again. And he tells the Guruji, can you further describe this word? Awareness, awareness, awareness means what? So the Guruji again takes the book and the pencil in his hand and writes, awareness, awareness, awareness is equal to awareness. I would say that in our lives also the message becomes very clear. Living in this life, if we are constantly aware of each and every action that we are doing, we will be always safe from the sinful actions. And this is what we saw in yesterday's two chapters. How constantly God was trying to explain Arjuna that you should be in constant awareness. If you really want to experience what Jivan Mukti is, if you really want to experience what liberation within life is, you have to be constantly aware on your senses. Because they are the ones who deceive you the most. They are the ones they wander away the most and does not allow us to concentrate our minds. The same message was given by Janak also to that sannyasi who said, while living in a household life, amidst all the comforts, how can you be Jeevan Mukt. And King Janak also explains to that sannyasi, where is your attention? That is the secret. The attention was on the lamp. And as the attention was on the lamp constantly, even while moving and seeing the whole palace, he was able to remain detached. He was not influenced by the beauty that he was seeing. And that is the secret which King Janak explains, that while living in this household life, amongst all the comforts, my attention is on that divine. The divine being, that is, I am an immortal soul, a divine entity, the child of the Supreme. Now, child does not mean I am a part of that Supreme. No, don't misunderstand. Child and the father are separate. It does not mean that there is one supreme being as a whole and then there are parts and every part comes down and they are all the supreme. So we are part of that supreme, so I am also the supreme. No. In our yesterday's both the chapters, I think it was very clearly explained by God Himself, that the soul is also an eternal entity, imperishable, indivisible, immortal, and the Supreme Soul is also eternal, immortal, indivisible, invisible entity. So the existence of the soul and the Supreme Soul is separate. If it is one, then whenever we are committing some or the other action, say charitable action, we never say Punya Paramatma. We always address Punyatma. The soul is a charitable soul. So it is not that the influence of our karmas is not on the soul. It is on the soul. Accordingly, we get the titles. If we have done some great task, we are a great soul, Mahatma. If somebody has done something religious, he is known as Dharmatma. If somebody has done a divine task, he is a Devatma. So Devatmas are many, Mahatmas are many, Punyatmas are many, but Paramatma is only one. It is not something that gets merged. When it is an eternal entity, it cannot be merged. Everybody's existence is separate. So as we proceed on to today's chapters, chapter 6 and chapter 7. Chapter 6 says about the Dhyana Yoga in detail. And what does it tell us? How to meditate? It is completely on meditation. How our external form should be for meditation. How our posture should be for meditation. What are the inculcations that we should have for meditation? What should be our internal stage for meditation? Very deeply, God Himself has explained to Arjuna where there are no doubts. Each and every questions that we have in our mind were in the minds of Arjuna also, and they are very perfectly answered by God. So here God clarifies Ashtang Yoga in the right method to practice it. Concentration of our attention on God and the difficulties that the mind has to face in concentration. From verse 1 to verse 4, the topic of Karma Yoga and the characteristics of the soul practicing yoga. From verse 5 to verse 10, self-progress and the inspiration to make your mind your best friend. From verse 11 to verse 19, the method to sit for meditation. From verse 20 to verse 32, the characteristics and experience of the one who is the embodiment of yoga, that is, the one who is completely in that form of meditation. From verse 33 to verse 36, the topic of the restraint of the mind. And from verse 37 to verse 47, the praise of meditation and the subject of the result of the ones whose yoga is adulterated. So various questions that he has asked. And when Arjuna asks, who is a real yogi? So God says, hey Arjuna, a real yogi or a renunciate is the one who does not keep the desire of the fruit of the action. Again and again he repeatedly mentions this. He performs while performing it and renunciates the very thought that generates desire for all those material objects which are for sensual happiness. He does not take his mind into that aspect. The one whose mind is within his control and always occupies himself in some purposeful task with a lot of pleasantness is said to have a very good stage while practicing yoga. The first thing to practice yoga is, I should not do yoga or meditation as a compulsion, but first have the happiness of doing it. When we are doing out of compulsion, oh, now I have to do this, otherwise I don't know what will happen. No. Not with this stage, not with an unhappy feeling. When we are sitting in meditation, whom are we connecting ourselves to? The Supreme Authority. Just imagine if a person in today's age has got an appointment to meet the president of the country or the prime minister of the country. He's got that letter that on a particular day, from this time to this time, he can come and meet. Just think about the stage he's in. How happy he feels. He will be telling out to so many, you know, I've got this appointment. I'm going to meet him. He's so full of happiness. Whom is he going to meet? A worldly personality. But still he has that happiness. Or such a great figure maybe who has given him an appointment. Okay, on a particular day you can come and I'll meet you. He tells out to so many people. He's so happy for that meeting. Maybe he goes 1 hour before. Doesn't matter if he has to sit there. So that he doesn't lose time maybe in the traffic or some way he doesn't get jammed. Otherwise the time will be over. So conscious about it. And not only that. Maybe that night he cannot sleep also. What he will talk, how he will talk, how he would be. That is constantly going on. So whom are we meeting in meditation? The Supreme Being. And if I am meeting the Supreme Authority of the whole universe, what should my stage be? I should be so happy to meet that Supreme Being. And what will talk to him? We have so many nice thoughts. When I sit for meditation, I'll talk to him like this. And just see how, as if your feet are not on the floor. You're flying. You feel so light within. You forget about the whole world at that time. Because whom are you having this meeting with? So that should be the stage. We do not think about the fruits at that time. Oh, I'll ask from him this. We feel so silly on the self, meeting such a personality and asking for small things maybe, small desires. If the king's son, the prince, goes up to the king and says, with hands bowed and pleads in front of me, in front of him, "Oh father, please fulfill this desire of mine. When you are fulfilling the desires of so many, can you just fulfill this small desire of mine?" Wouldn't he look foolish? Whose child is he, and in front of whom is he saying this? When he knows I'm the prince, whatever my father's property is my property, he would not beg. Everything is at his service. So this is the consciousness I have to have within myself. That is why again and again, why? Because Arjuna's stage was that in the first chapter when the Vishad was there, "Oh God," and lamenting upon the consequences, "Can you please help me? I don't want to fight this war. I don't want the kingdom of heaven also. I don't want this. I don't want that. I'm satisfied with whatever I have." Whom is he talking to? So that is why God was also smiling at him. He was desiring for those near and dear ones. Maybe who are not worthy to stay. So when I am meeting with God, if I am a real yogi, I don't think of anything else at that time. Everything seems to be so worthless for me in front of this meeting. And I sit in that intoxication. And with that intoxication, when I just go in front of him, as if he fills me with all the power, he fills me with all the capacities, he makes me feel so relaxed, so comfortable. Just go into this experience. Don't think about any desires, any fruits at that moment. No, that is not meditation at all. No matter wherever you are sitting, but you are contemplating on him, and the moment you think about him, you are filled with that happiness. Whom are you thinking about? Not an ordinary human being. Not a degraded personality. But you are thinking about such a personality, the supreme personality of this world. So how happy should you be? So this is what he said. You should have such a lot of pleasantness and a very good stage while practicing yoga. Because then only the mind will not wander here and there. Because wherever the mind is attracted, immediately it will wander away there. So let me attract my mind towards that supreme being. And nothing else is greater than him. If I have this realization, nothing is greater than that supreme being, the mind will stop wandering. It is concentrated. And we enjoy that meditation. You hardly will realize how much time has passed by. Just as you have been coming here, listening to this discourse, have you ever realized how the 2 hours pass by? And in that 2 hours, does your mind wander away anywhere? No. You are enjoying. You are receiving something. And so, every day you feel like, today what are we going to get? What new things are we going to get? The time where it has passed, we hardly realize. As if we are sitting in the company of that Supreme Being and He is teaching me, Arjuna, how I should meditate. So my question, how should I meditate, is answered, isn't it? So beautifully. Then He says, human beings should always make self-progress. God is telling Arjuna how he should make self-progress. So He said he should not let the soul experience downfall. Because the conscient being is the friend or a foe of itself. Atma hi swayam ka shatru or mitra hai. So the question which arises in the mind of Arjuna, maybe in the minds of us also, when does it become a friend and when does it become a foe? For that, God answers, it is a friend when along with the mind all the senses are one, and a foe when the mind and the senses are under influence of vices, evils. That is when we become our own enemy. And then He further says, the ones who have won over the mind and are able to keep their mind peaceful during praise and defamation, happiness and sorrow, cold, heat, and are absorbed in the remembrance of the Supreme Soul, then it is said that we are our own friends. The mind has become a friend. Make your mind your best friend. And it will start elevating you. There will be nothing that can become an obstacle for you. Because obstacles are the creation of weak mind. When the mind is influenced by weaknesses, oh, what will I do if this happens? What will I do if this happens? So obstacles are the creation of a weak mind. But if you make your mind your best friend, there's no obstacle for you. You are beyond. You conquer anything that comes in the way. Oh, that's why it is said, where there is a will, there is a way. The will is that I want to meet Him. And when I make my mind my best friend and I take along Him with me, there is no obstacle. Everything is gone. But when the mind is the worst enemy, each and every step you take, there is some other obstacle. And then we start complaining, what can I do? My mind is such. My mind is my worst enemy. I sit down to meditate and it wanders away here and there. I don't know, how can I control the mind? So making your mind your best friend, how can you do that? By generating positive thoughts. The more positive thoughts are there in the mind, your mind becomes your best friend. But when there are negative thoughts emerging, the mind becomes your worst enemy. A beautiful story I am reminded of. Once there was a king and he had a friend. And his friend was a timber merchant. They were very good friends. Every day they used to meet. One day this timber merchant went into his godown and was looking at his stock of all the wood. As he was looking, he came up to sandalwood. And when he saw the stock of sandalwood, he was surprised. So much sandalwood? So he started calculating. His business mind started working. So much of sandalwood. So much of my money is blocked in this sandalwood. Now who will buy all this sandalwood? So immediately, in today's age, the tendency of the human mind is to think negative. So immediately he has this thought. If somebody dies, then definitely a great personality, if they die, then to burn that great personality, they would order the sandalwood only. But But in the whole city, who is the great man? Who will be burned in sandalwood? It was no other than the king. So although the king was his friend, he has this thought, what if the king dies? All my sandalwood will be gone and I'll get all my money back. So this evil thought which came up into his mind, in the evening when he goes to the palace to meet the king, his friend, seeing the king also, he has this thought, but the king is too young, he won't die so soon. So then again in his mind says, what if somebody attacks him? But then the mind again says, no one will attack him because he has got very friendly relationship with all the neighboring countries, neighboring states. So nobody will attack him. Then again the mind generates the thought, what if somebody kills him? But again the intellect says, who will kill him? All the subjects are also contended with the king, so nobody will kill him. Then again the negative thought emerges. I come here regularly, nobody has doubt on me because I'm the friend. What if I kill him? Just see how it goes. But he did not have the courage to kill the king. So as this inner dialogue was going on between the mind and the intellect, the mind was constantly generating a negative thought and the intellect was trying to take him away. And seeing his expressions, the king felt uncomfortable because the vibrations were such. So he asked him, what is happening to you? Why do you look so upset today? You do not look fresh as usual. So he says, nothing. I was just having some business thoughts, that's all. And he turns the topic, but constantly at the back of his mind, it is going on, something is going on. When he leaves the palace, the whole night he could not sleep. He had so many thoughts, alternate, this thought, that thought, so many alternate thoughts. Now the vibrations, because they were very good friends, the mental frequency was tuning with one another. So whatever he was thinking, a telepathic connection was being established. So the king has the thought, the king also could not sleep that night. And he has a thought, this friend of mine is so rich, he has a lot of money, and he does not have anyone before him, after him. He is alone, he does not have any children, anyone who will carry out his name afterwards also. Whom is he earning for? So the king has a thought, if he dies, his whole property will belong to the kingdom. Now both were having similar thoughts. The king also was thinking, but he won't die so soon, he's still young. Whole night both of them could not sleep. The next day also, when they met, again there was that uneasy feeling between both of them. Both were quiet. The whole time there was no dialogue between them. There was constantly struggle going on within the mind and the intellects of both. This went on for about a week. And when they got so uneasy, finally the friend goes up to the king and says, I have come to ask for a forgiveness. I'm so upset. So the king said, what are you upset about? And why do you ask for forgiveness? What have you done? So the friend says, I have not done anything. But I am afraid of my own self. Then he narrates the whole story. So now the king understands why I was having such negative thoughts in my mind. So both ask for forgiveness from one another. And then they sit down. It is the sandalwood has created all that negative thought. So now something has to be done with the sandalwood. Otherwise, the timber merchant said, whenever I would go to my shop, again the same negative thought would keep on creeping within me. So the king said, well, I have everything in my palace. I don't think I need anything, but we can do one thing. Outside the palace in the gardens, we can build a temple and use some of your sandalwood in the temple, which will constantly be scenting the airs, and people would be coming and having peace of mind, and everybody will spend their evening beautifully in the gardens. So a positive thought came of building the temple. And the plan was made and everything, the work started and the whole sandalwood lot was sent. The king, from the treasure, wanted to pay for the sandalwood. So at that time, the friend says, I don't want this money. Because it was the desire for this money that all the negative thought was coming in my mind. And my mind became my worst enemy. And I spent so many sleepless nights because he was my enemy. Now I'm feeling so relaxed, so I don't want the money. But we can do one thing. You wanted my money and my property for the kingdom. So I donate this money for helping the poor in the kingdom. So when both had a positive thought, one, the king had the positive thought of building a temple, the friend had the positive thought of helping the poor, they felt relaxed. They were able to get good sleep. So the mind becomes our worst enemy, can make us feel so much uneasy when we start generating negative thoughts. And it becomes our best friend when we are nourished with good thoughts. Since the past 3-4 days, when you are getting good, healthy nourishment, you are enjoying, feeling happy. The mind is also dancing. It is feeling light. So he experienced. And supposing if I talk about politics here, there, you feel, what a boring subject she has taken up. Gita is such an interesting subject and she is talking out of the way. You won't come the next day. You'll say, well, I don't have time. And here some people are coming morning and evening. Morning 2 hours, evening 2 hours, 4 hours. Getting good nourishment and feeling so light the whole day. How is the whole day? Excellent. Best. Because your mind has become your best friend. So it is giving you all the happiness. And when it becomes your worst enemy, it gives you all the sorrows and sufferings and makes you upset and makes you stressed and you feel so uneasy. This is what we have all experienced. So this is what God says to Arjuna also. That when you are absorbed in the remembrance of the Supreme Soul, you are beyond all the dualities. The dual experiences you get in your life. Because you have won over the mind, you have made your mind your best friend. And so then it becomes easy to control the senses also. Once the mind is your friend, it is easy to control your senses. It is not difficult at all. Then he says, a yogi who is contented with his spiritual knowledge as well as the experience of the soul, such a conqueror of senses has equal vision towards mud, stone, gold, and is able to deal with people of various natures by feelings of equality. Means nothing can fool him. Even if there is gold lying or even if there is some mud lying, he would not get upset by seeing that mud. He would not get upset by, he would not get attracted by seeing that gold also. Everything is equal for him. Because he is attaining, getting something so rich. But these things are just like nothing in front of that treasure which he is receiving. And even towards all human beings, his feelings are of equality. A yogi with control and an attitude of not hoarding things always remains in solitude. Keeps his mind under control and concentrates his intellect in constant remembrance of the Supreme Soul. So these are the various characteristics of how he can keep his mind absorbed in the remembrance of the Supreme. And then how should he sit for meditation? Very clearly explained in the 6th chapter. One should place his mat in a pure place of solitude with internal peace. The first thing, he should clarify all the confusions. Whatever thoughts are disturbing him, clarify those thoughts. When you sit for meditation, at least you should be peaceful with your own self. Free from fear. Don't remember God on the basis of fear. Don't be God-fearing children. Remember him out of love. With a promise of celibacy. Be pure in your thoughts. Be pure in your feelings. Be pure in your way of life. He should sit upright with determination, keeping his mind, senses and action in control. Concentrate his mind, intellect and vision on an incorporeal Supreme Soul with pure feelings in his heart. Beautiful method of how to sit in meditation. This yoga is accomplished only with ideal food, because food has a great impact on our thoughts. As is the food, so will be the thoughts in your mind. It is said that once a sannyasi was, for his survival, used to go out once in a day, especially in the afternoon, and beg some food from the householder. And whatever he used to get in his patra, he used to come, have that. So, one day when he went to that house, so the lady in that house said, "Can you just wait for a few minutes? I'll just prepare the rotis and I'll give you." So the sannyasi said, "I don't mind sitting for 2 minutes, for some time here." So he sat on the outside stone, outside the house. He did not even sit inside. He sat outside. So the lady said, "Why don't you come in?" He said, "No, I just prefer to sit outside. Just get me whatever food you can and I'll just go away." Now when she went into the kitchen, she found there was no dough for the chapatis, no rice also. So what to do? So she went into the neighbor's house. There was nobody in the neighbor's house. And she stole some rice and some dough for the chapati. And immediately came and prepared the food and offered the sannyasi. After eating that food, the sannyasi saw a child on the road and he felt, "When I will get old, I should at least have some disciple who will do some service for me. So let me take this child away with me so that I can instill that sanskaras from the childhood and make him my best disciple." As soon as he had this thought and he was about to take that child, suddenly he came back to his awareness and thought, "What am I doing?" Definitely there was something wrong in the food. So he goes up to that lady again and asks, "Can you just tell the truth? What type of food did you serve me?" So then she had to tell the truth. That because I did not have any rice and because you came at my doorstep, I did not want you to go away empty-handed. So I stole some rice from the neighbor's house. And I stole some dal also from the neighbor's house and I prepared the chapatis and rice for you. So then he realized, yes, because I ate that food which was stolen, I had this thought of stealing. And this is always seen. As is the food, so is the mind. Jaisa ann, vaisa man. This is a saying. And it has an impact. We do not track. Why did I get such thoughts? We never track in our lives. But if we start tracking, why did such thoughts emerge? Then it will be very clear that how the food is also affecting the state of mind. So if I want to concentrate in my meditation, the food should be ideal. And even the leisure, ahar and vihar, these two things have to be paid attention upon. Your vihar should also not be such which wanders your mind even when you are sitting in meditation. And your ahar also should not be such which constantly wanders your mind. So the yoga is accomplished only with ideal food and leisure, right gestures in action and balanced sleep. Not too much, not too less. Balanced sleep and state of awakening. This is when some people ask us, how many hours should we sleep if we want to do meditation? And which is the best time for meditation? The best time for meditation is Amrit Vela, morning hours, which are compared to nectar, Amrit. It is known as Amrit Vela, that is the time for nectar for the soul. And which is that time? The Amrit Vela starts from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. So then some people have this thought, then when should we sleep? How can we get up so early at the middle of the night? It is not early. But according to the science also, it has a scientific reason. How? This body is made up of the 5 elements of nature. And the 5 elements of nature, they also awake and sleep in cycles. After the sun sets, we never pluck flowers from trees. We never disturb trees. Why? We say they are asleep now. As soon as the sun has set and is a little bit dark, the plants also, they go to sleep. What do we mean by they go to sleep? That they start, they change their cycle. They start producing carbon dioxide and they start taking in oxygen. And at Amrit Vela, their cycle again changes. 4 o'clock, their cycle starts changing from 3 o'clock onwards. So when their cycle changes, they start producing oxygen and start taking in carbon dioxide. So that means they are awake. So they are still functioning according to their cycle. They have not disturbed themselves. But we human beings, we have disturbed our cycles. We wake till late night, maybe 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. And after 12 o'clock we go to sleep. Till then, one of our sleep cycles should be over. We also sleep in cycles. So till then, our sleep cycle should be over. And afterwards when we sleep, after 12 o'clock, we feel like, okay, now I should go to sleep. That means we have disturbed our cycle. We have what can we say? We have disturbed the mechanism of this body. Before we had this scientific developments, we human beings also used to sleep, go to sleep by 9 o'clock maximum the latest. So that by 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock we complete our two cycles of sleep. And then till 3 o'clock we complete 3 cycles of sleep, that is 6 hours of sleep. Each cycle is of 2 hours. So before we used to go and function according to nature. But now that we have disturbed the cycle of our nature and we go to sleep late at night, by the time we should complete our third cycle, we are going to sleep. So what happens? That this body does not cooperate us, and that is why the diseases are coming up, because we have disturbed our cycles, because we have disturbed our nature. That is why. Therefore, there is a saying, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy and wise. These sayings are not just for the sake of saying. This has some meaning. Why? Because when the nature also awakes at Amrit Vela, the fresh oxygen they produce is so healthy. And if during that time I sit for meditation, it is like giving Amrit to the self. That is why the parents also advise their children, don't keep yourself awake till late night. Go to sleep early. Wake up in the early morning and you sit for your study. Because when that fresh oxygen is released, and if during that time I study, my mind and intellect becomes most intelligent, most powerful. And this is practically experienced. I have experimented with my own self. And I've got the result. Every time when my exams, I used to just get up early in the morning and just go through my subjects. When I was a child studying in school, I used to remember everything. I always stood first in class. So this is my practical experiment. I developed my mind in such a way. And during that time when I used to sit for meditation, whatever I talked to God, as if He was responding everything at that moment. He used to fill that capacity within me, whichever I wanted. But that is the early morning hours only. And this, if you want to experiment with your life, experiment. And you'll see the results. Beautiful results you'll see. But for that, you need to go to sleep at least by 10 o'clock. At least, latest by 10 o'clock. So that your first cycle is before midnight. And if you can sleep 3 cycles, that is from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock first cycle, 11 to 1 is the second cycle, and 1 to 3 is the third cycle. If you don't wake up at 3 o'clock also, wake up at 4 o'clock at least. And you can see the difference in your life. You can progress as much as you want to. Nothing, you make your mind so healthy, no changes in situation can ever bring you under stress. You can handle everything as you want to. If you function, if you make your body function according to the laws of nature. So that is why God has also advised Arjuna that the yoga is accomplished only when ahar, vihar, shayan, jagran, all 4 are according to the law of nature. But this science we have still not understood. We have explored the whole world maybe, and out of the world also, but we did not understand or explore the right way of living. We disturb and polluted our own systems. This is why every day there is a new disease coming up. But if we function according to the laws of nature, the body will always remain in a healthy stage. There cannot be any disease in this body. You will be healthy forever. Your mind will be healthy, your body will be healthy, spiritually you will be healthy, socially in your relationships also you will be healthy. But if your sleep is not, because after 4 o'clock there is no cycle of sleep. Never think the more we sleep, many people wake up or sleep up till 10 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. And even after waking up at 8 o'clock, they are still exhausted. They did not feel as if they have got a fresh sleep. Why? Because they slept after the nature awakes. Which means they did not get that fresh oxygen. Which they need to get. And therefore, their mind is constantly disturbed. Even though they are sleeping, but there are so many dreams coming up in their mind. They do not feel fresh. You can experiment. Sleep early, get up early and see how the day is. Sleep late, get up late and see how the day goes. How mentally, physically, socially, everywhere you will be upset. And there will be maximum problems you face that day. You can experiment with your lives. Because God never speaks lies. If God has said this to Arjuna, if it is God speaks, how to meditate? So the best time for meditation is early morning hours. And at a stretch, how much should we meditate? 45 minutes. That is the capacity of the brain to concentrate. So from 4 o'clock to 4:45, before 5 o'clock, you should complete your meditation. And see how your life becomes. You start setting up your life. You become mentally healthy. You start empowering yourself. And you'll enjoy your life. The quality of life changes. This is why we see that the awareness is being created in the world. For health also, they have now realized that because we have disturbed our nature, we did not allow it to function in the right manner. There are so many problems that are there in the world. So this is what God said to Arjuna. And then he said, just as a lamp is unflickering and upright in a place where there is no breeze, similarly, one is called the embodiment of yoga. When one's mind is in control and yogi is stabilized in soul consciousness during his practice. And you can concentrate your mind as much as you can. These are the best hours for meditation. Amrit Vela. The time for nectar. To nourish your mind and to make your mind healthy. The best time for relaxing the mind, because during that hours you don't have any work. So the mind would not wander away in any task, any work, nothing. You can keep it under control. And then he says, a yogi goes beyond all materialistic and mental rituals, as well as stabilizes in soul consciousness from his vicious state of mind. So going beyond the mental rituals also, materialistic rituals. All this that we do in the path of bhakti, chanting, singing, bhajans, prayers, why do we do that? It is said that when the sense organs gets busy, while chanting, I take up the rosary and I make my hand busy. I make my mind busy. So when I make my senses busy, In that performance, then the mind slowly can concentrate. Just as a small child, if he is so naughty, he is not under control in anyone, everyone would say, what a child he is. It's difficult to control him. He is breaking things, he is doing so much of disturbance, creating so much of nuisances. How to control that child? The more you beat the child, the more rigid he will become. So beating also will not help. In the future run, he will become the most rigid child, which will be very difficult for us to control him then also. And the whole life maybe, he will disturb so many who would come into his contact. And finally a day comes when he kills himself. He commits suicide when he also is frustrated with his own life. Because nobody is talking to him, nobody is wanting him, as if he is his unwanted. So he commits a suicide. But for that child, if we give him such a toy in which he gets busy, nowadays that's why very intelligent toys are created. Because the child's mind is so hyper. It is not like our mind when we were child at that age. They understand so much because the media exposure is so much in front of them. A 5-year-old boy can understand so many things what we used to understand at the age of 15 maybe. He talks about such things which astonishes the elders also. How come he has got this knowledge? From where? It reminds me that once I was having a program in one of the cities and somebody shared something beautiful. That there was a 5-year-old girl and she used to go to the school for 1 or 2 hours and then she would be at home and she was kept by an ayabai who used to look after that 5-year-old girl. Because both the parents were working. The mother was also working the whole day. She would go in the morning, come in the evening. The father would also go out for work in the morning and the evening he would also come back. So the child would see the face of the parents only in the evening. The whole day she was alone at home, playing with the toys, playing with the ayabai, that's all. So when it was the time for the mother to come, she immediately, when she heard the car, she ran to the door to greet the mother. And the mother saw that the whole house was filled with toys and everything was so untidy. And that was her day where she had faced so many problems and she was so much stressed. So when she enters the house and she sees the untidy house, she got so angry on the girl. What are you doing? 5-year-old girl. And the girl had just come running to greet the mother and she gets this reaction. So the girl was so intelligent. She doesn't say a word. She sits and starts picking up her things, seeing the temperature of the mother. And then she tells the mother quietly, as soon as she quietens, she said, I think today you had a worse day, doesn't matter. I can understand. 5-year-old girl telling the mother, I think today you had the worst day. I can understand that you cannot love me at this time. The mother felt so bad. So 5-year-old child can understand so much what we cannot even think of. The mother said to me, I was so astonished to listen these words from my daughter. And then I realized the whole day she was alone. And she was expecting that love from me. And instead of giving her that love that she was missing our school. And still she mature enough to tell me, maybe you had the worst day today, I can understand. And she is adjustable. She had adjusted to me. So this is what today's children are. And if you give them such toys, which will make them learn, make them busy, and they can learn and progress in life, they will stop all the naughtiness, they'll stop all the mischievous things, and they stop becoming rigid. Same thing for the mind. The mind is like a naughty child. And we are always trying to be pressuring the mind and controlling the mind with pressure. You shouldn't think this, I shouldn't think that, I should think this. I'm trying to bring my mind in control. But that is not the right way. And then we give these toys. Have the rosary. Go on rotating the rosary so that the mind can be instilled in that concentration. Then we do the puja so that I see the image of God. I do the puja so my mouth is also singing, my ears are also listening, my hands are also moving in the puja. So when each and every sense organ is engaged, then we feel as if I can concentrate my mind. So that's why some people say, when I do puja, I feel my mind gets concentrated. But that will definitely. But in meditation, we say these are all just some instruments that we have given to ourselves to concentrate. And tomorrow, if we don't have any of the instruments with us, means our mind will not be concentrated. So why don't I learn this technique? Make my mind mature enough to understand things and to make him the best friend so that it can control the senses by itself. So for that, we have to be soul conscious from this vicious state of mind and thus experience super sensuous joy and self-contentment during the practice. By stabilizing in this true form and being the embodiment of all attainments, when we are soul conscious, we naturally attain everything from the Father. It's our right to attain. One cannot be shaken by any form of sorrow. One is successful in his yoga when it is practiced with determined faith and patience. Yes, it will take time. It's not an overnight process. We have to keep that patience that we will be able to overcome this. But have that determined faith also. If I won't do, who else will do it? So keep the faith in the self and you can see it happening. Because determination leads to success. Wherever there is determination, it brings success in our endeavors. And then further he says, the mind needs to be pulled from wherever it travels due to its mischief and instability and brought under control and link it with God. In this way, one needs to be constantly practicing yoga. And such a self-controlled yogi is liberated from all his sins. He experiences super sensuous joy and the highest bliss in the company of God. And by developing feelings of brotherhood towards all, he awakens the feeling of the whole world to be my family, to be our family. Vasudhev Kutumbakam. This is the feeling that is emerged. Because we start perceiving everyone as souls. They are also souls. We are also souls. They are so as the children of the Supreme Soul, we souls are all brothers and sisters. So this is how we develop the Vasudhev Kutumbakam feeling. And then he further says, Arjuna, ask a question, which it may be the question of many of us. Oh God, this mind is very mischievous, stubborn and powerful. So I consider it very difficult to control it like the air. As the air cannot be controlled, similarly the mind is so mischievous, stubborn, powerful, so it is very difficult to control, which many of us has this problem. So God says, Arjuna, there is no doubt that the mind is mischievous, but practice and distaste can enable one to control it. One finds yoga to be difficult when one cannot control the mind, but yoga is easy for the one who makes the effort to bring the mind under control. Practice makes a mind perfect. And we can do the practice, constantly practice and progress. It reminds me of a beautiful incident from the Mahabharata. That once the five Pandavas were sleeping, all young ones, and they were all sleeping. In the middle of the night, Arjuna happened to awake. So he felt as if the place next to him is empty because Bhim was sleeping with him. So he thought, why is this place empty? That means Bhim must have gone somewhere else. So he thought, where did he go? So he got up and went to look for Bhim. And he found Bhim in the kitchen. And he was having his food. So Arjuna said, Bhim, at this time you're having food? So Bhim looked up and said, I was feeling so hungry. So that's why I felt I didn't get sleep. So I thought, let me have something to eat, then I can sleep well. So Arjuna says, doesn't matter, you can eat. But how can you eat in the darkness? Switch on the lamp, maybe. Light the lamp. So that whatever you are eating goes in the mouth directly. Doesn't it go somewhere here and there? All children innocently ask this question. So Bhim laughs at him and says, Arjuna, I'm so much used to eating that it will go in the mouth only and nowhere else. I have a practice. So even if there is no light, I can eat in the darkness. So from there, Arjuna takes the inspiration that if Bhim can eat at night without any lamp, and it goes directly in the mouth, if I also practice, and if I practice my archery in such a way, then even in the darkness, if I hit the arrow, it should go to the target only. And this is how he becomes a great archer. So practice makes a man perfect. So it inspires us also. We also need to practice every day. It is not an overnight process. It needs a practice. And when we practice, we'll be able to master the mind easily. And which we saw in the morning, what meditation is. And then in the end, Arjuna asked another question. O God, an effort maker who has faith in yoga, but fails at his end time and his mind gets shattered, then what status will he achieve? Will he get destroyed like the shattered clouds? So God says, an effort maker can never experience downfall. In the next birth, he awakens the divine sanskars of his previous birth and gets attracted towards the path of yoga. And the yogi who purifies all his sins through his principles and progresses with sincerity attains the elevated status. A yogi soul is elevated than the ones practicing penance. One who does meditation is elevated, is higher than tapasvis, than jnani ones, and ones who perform desirous actions. Thus, hey Arjuna, become a yogi and together with surrender, practice yoga from your heart. Surrender yourself and practice yoga with the true feelings in your heart. Do not deviate from those feelings. So this is how he explains Dhyan Yoga and each and every smallest act, smallest things that has to be taken into attention is clarified by God. from the food, from the leisure, sleeping, waking, sitting, how we need to sit, when we need to sit, everything is clarified. So I think today I'll give you some more tips for meditation, and especially how to sit in meditation. Because when we sit in meditation, as he said, you should place the mat on a clean ground, in a clean place, and practice meditation. So today I'll teach you how we should sit in meditation and the science behind that sitting in meditation also. Either sit in Padmasana, Sukhasana, Ardha Padmasana. This is the best posture for meditation. Why? What is the science behind this? And it is seen that normally it is said there are two outlets of our vibrations from the body. The first outlet is the feet. Lot of energy comes out through the feet. So bend the feet so that those vibrations stop. So that when we meditate, we need that energy upwards for the mind to concentrate. So when we sit in this position, instead of the energy going down, that energy starts going upwards, which is very useful for concentration of mind. I'll just give you a small illustration. Supposing we are watering the garden and we have a hose pipe, and somebody suddenly comes to meet us, and the switch of the tap is far off. So normally what do? Bend the pipe. As soon as we bend the hose pipe, the water stops. So bending of the legs. And this bending is in all the religions because of this science. In Hindu religion, the yogis, the rishis, munis, they sat in Sukhasan, Padmasan, Ardha Padmasana, bending of legs. So blocking that energy which is coming out constantly. In the Muslim religion, they sit in Vajrasana. They bend their legs there also. In the Christian religion, they kneel down when they pray. Bending of the legs there also. So in every religion, when a person offers his prayers, his legs are bent. So that energy stops coming out from there, starts moving upwards, which is very essential, useful for our concentration of mind. That is why we bend this. And nowadays we find in the world there is a lot of awareness about pyramid healing. People use pyramids, and it is said whatever is kept in the pyramid, it does not rot. It remains as it is. And this has been experimented by so many people. And therefore they have pyramids on the houses, sometimes their rooftop, like a pyramid made. But actually, this asana is a pyramid asana. Because from any angle you will see, you will find a triangle formed. This is a triangle. From the side also, if you find, there is a triangle formed. From the back also, there is a triangle formed from this side also. And when we sit, the bottom part is square. So this is a pyramid posture in which the meditation will be very soothing experiencing. So this is what the rishis and munis, the tapasvis, they had adopted in India, and the science was this. They were able to concentrate their mind. The second outlet, that is why in olden times people did not have sofas in their houses. They used to sit on the ground. Even if they had guests, they used to sit down. Yes, today those who have knee problems, I do not tell them to sit in this posture. If you have a knee problem, don't do that. Don't force yourself. But those who can sit, this is the most ideal posture for meditation. Nowadays everything is on chairs, tables, sofas. We have lost this practice of sitting below. Before, when people used to do business, in the business also there was no table and chairs. They used to have gaddis. Even when they used to take food, they used to sit down and have their food. Even the students in Gurukuls, when they went for studying, they were made to sit down. So that what they learn does not go out. It remains there. But now, when in the schools also there are chairs and tables, on one side they study, on the other side there is earthing. It goes down. So after the school, you ask the child, what have you learned today? He remembers nothing. Is zero. So whenever you want your child to learn, make him sit down in this posture, and the energy which will go up will help him concentrate his mind better, and he'll do better in school also. The second outlet for the vibrations is the hands. There's a lot of energy coming out. That's why when people go to gurus, either they wash the feet, that means they are taking in the energy in the water, and they say it's an energized water and they drink that water. We do not advise that. Why should I depend upon the energy of somebody else? Why don't I practice that posture where I generate that spiritual energy within my own self? That is why some people, they touch the feet and ask for blessings, thinking that from the feet I'll get that blessings which will come and penetrate into me. It won't. Sometimes they keep the feet of the guru on a special asana, and some people go and put their head onto that toe, thinking that when the toe touches the soul, it will get enlightened. These are all blind faiths. And Raj Yoga does not allow this followings. Raj Yoga says, why do we have to depend upon the energy of somebody else? And we do not know how much realized soul he is. What is his stage? We don't know. So practice where you generate that energy within your own self with your own pure thoughts. Sitting in this posture. This is the most ideal posture. So second outlet is this hands. That's why when people go to gurus, they want ashirvad. Put your hand on my head. Put your hand. Now that is now in no way going to help anyone. And by just keeping the hand is not going to bless that person also. 1 second by placing that hand, do you think that will charge the energy of that soul? Impossible. And why should I depend upon others? So that is why in India, in Hindu religion, we folded our hands, closed the circuit, so that the flow of energy is natural. In Christian religion also, they pray with their hands folded, so that the circuit is closed and the flow of energy is natural. If this is the giving form, this is the taking form. That is why the Muslims, they held their hands up which receive that energy. in Reiki. People help others, try to heal others with their energy by placing the hand wherever the person is feeling pain. And they feel relieved. So this means giving and this means taking. So this is why in our world there are certain customs of sitting. It has a scientific impact. So when we sit in meditation, we see Mahatma, Buddha, all the great people, when they sat in meditation, they had their hands folded, so that the flow of energy is constant. You can sit like this, you can sit like this, whichever way you feel comfortable. And the third outlet is the eyes. When a person is having ill feelings in his heart, the moment you see into his eyes, you can immediately realize he is not comfortable with me. Or this person is so loving. How did we come to know whether he is loving or whether he is having ill feelings? The eyes radiate. If a person gets angry, his eyes show that he is angry. Even though he may not speak anything, but the eyes radiate those vibrations. So that is why in meditation, we do not close our eyes. Why? Because if all the three outlets are closed, how can I release the negative energy from within? So we need one outlet so that I can release that energy. And when I focus my attention on the Supreme, I allow the vibrations to come within. I absorb those vibrations within. And what do we have to think? I am giving you those thoughts, positive thought exercises every day, and trying to go into the feelings as God has advised Arjuna, from the heart. Let those feelings emerge from the heart. Because the more you put your heart into meditation, the more you will enjoy meditation. The more you will feel light within, as if you are releasing all those negative feelings and your heart is filled with pure feelings. Not just pure feelings, peaceful feelings, loveful feelings, such good feelings, positive feelings. And sit in an intoxicated stage. Whom am I meeting? I'm meeting the Supreme Being, the Supreme Authority of this universe. It's no ordinary being. So with that intoxication, how fortunate I am. Out of all, only a few are selected, as God says in the further chapters. Koto me koi aur koi me bhi koi virla. Out of the many, only a few are selected by God. And out of the few, still less, most chosen ones are selected for such elevation. So I am that chosen one. So how much intoxicated you should feel from within. So that is real meditation. Putting the feelings into it. So can we meditate today? Yes? And when you go home, and if you can wake up tomorrow morning, if you can, because I don't know what your body is conditioned to and how it is conditioned and how much you have authority upon your own senses. So if you can, just sit in the morning hours, focus your attention on any light and visualize that Supreme Light in front of you. And just allow those vibrations to flow into your natural being in a natural way. You don't have to recite anything. You don't have to chant anything. Just set with some pure positive feelings and experience. How fresh you will feel. And then tomorrow, if you feel like it, you have gained something, you can continue also. Morning, evening, both hours are very good hours. Amrit Vela and Sandhya Kal are two beautiful times when you can have meditation. So for a few moments, you can sit in meditation. Sit upright with your back straight. For a few moments, let us turn our attention away from the external world and focus within with my inner eye. I see myself as a divine being. In the center of my forehead, a conscient entity, a divine star. This body is like a temple where I'm seated. And I am the master of my senses. But I am separate from this body, from this temple. And slowly and gradually, I take my mind and intellect on a journey, a spiritual journey inwards. Away from this world five elements, far beyond the sun, moon and stars, into the Brahma element, which is my divine home. With my inner eye, I visualize myself in that supreme abode, where there is divinity spreaded everywhere. And I am free from all the bondages, all the burdens. I feel light within. I see myself in my original, real form. I am a pure being. I am the embodiment of purity.
This is my true identity, my true self. My real nature is that of peace. I calm down my mind and I feel the vibrations of peace. It's such a soothing feeling that I experience. I feel completely relaxed, being peaceful. This is my true nature. Being peaceful, I feel so happy from within. I feel intoxicated. And I get refreshed when I have this thought of meeting the Supreme Father. Who is Almighty? Just as I am a point of light, my Father is also a point of divine light, infinite in his qualities. He is the embodiment of divinity. As I focus my attention on the Supreme, which is such a beautiful form, so powerful, his rays of light and might are constantly radiating. As I concentrate my mind on this divine form, the divine light engulfs me, embraces me, and I feel so fortunate being in the company of God, my father and mother. How fortunate I am to experience his love, God's love. Is unique, unconditional. I feel like being in his company His company empowers me. He is my supreme Sadguru who blesses me with all the blessings. He is my most beloved friend who guides me at every step. He is my beloved. And He is my companion at every step. Slowly and gradually, for some moments, let me be focused, deeply absorbed in His love, as if I fly in ecstasy. And I experience the highest bliss, Paramanand. It makes me feel so fresh, and as if I've recharged my battery. Now slowly and gradually, I turn my attention back to the physical world. Constant awareness that I am the master of the senses. My mind is my best friend. Om Shanti.